an imposing cathedral, then inside, columns illuminated with purple and green lights. A white woman in her 30s, Chris Helenga, stands near tables decorated with flowers. Chris's bald head is coated with glitter, resembling a sparkling cap. An order of service booklet with Chris on the cover, holding a cat, then someone writing a message. There aren't the words to describe someone as original, special and real as you. A black gospel singer takes the applause. In the pulpit, actress Dawn French, in character as the Vicar of Dibley.
Hello, ladles and jelly swoons. You'll be pleased to know that I've done a lot of research on Chris, and it is crystal clear, do you see what I did there? That he was a very remarkable man, indeed.
You've got the wrong Chris.
What? Does anyone have any information about the right Chris?
It's just cancer, good person, usual stuff.
Okay, Chris, apparently born in Germany, raised in Daventry, roughed up by London, settled in Cornwall. After a cancer diagnosis, which would floor the best of us, Chris McMahon founded Copperfield, apparently.
Come on.
Everyone in this room is a testament to the amazing patchwork of friends Chris has woven throughout her life. Right, I'm sorry, I've got to go. I'm very sorry.
Chris joins in the applause. Chris, in her 20s, with shoulder-length blonde hair, talks to a camera.
You have cancer. Three words that changed my world forever.
Chris was 23 when diagnosed with breast cancer.
I had stage 4 cancer. There is no stage 5.
Her terminal illness inspired Chris to launch a cancer awareness campaign.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Chris Helenga.
A TV report.
She's now set up a charity called Copperfield.
We just want every young woman out there to know that checking their breasts from an early age could save their life one day.
In 2013, Chris made a film about her campaign with her twin sister, Maren.
You really are changing the language of cancer. It wasn't something to be scared of.
You are a miracle. It's astonishing.
In 2023, she let the cameras back into her life to tell the rest of her story.
Cancer gave me the life I could never have imagined.
Her story is just mind-blowing.
She came here to do big things.
Stop standing around doing nothing. There's things to do!
And she did.
Christine Helenga!
On stage at the Pride of Britain Awards.
You don't need to be afraid of dying. You need to be afraid that you're not living.
Living every second, the Chris Helenga story. 2023, 14 years since diagnosis. A bald-headed Chris opens a long cardboard box.
Pretty simple, apparently. You should have a lid, a base, a pad and a rope.
Yeah, seems long enough. Connect side panels of base on both ends and push together. Insert tabs into slots. I quite like this IKEA moment that we're having. And then it says fold over both long edges and lock into the corners.
You're not going to help.
No, okay. I'm really enjoying watching you do this. Guess what we're making?
Like, what's sadder than making your own casket? Failing to make your own casket. Because you're so lonely.
They're assembling a cardboard casket.
And eventually, I mean, how will they ever be found? Like, lying next to the casket, they couldn't be.
Just lying next to it.
2023. Chris sits facing a camera screen. She has a few hairs on her head and wears lipstick and earrings.
Let's start with your diagnosis.
God, such a boring story. So I was 22 when I originally went to the GP with a lumpy boob. She said it's nothing to worry about, very likely to be hormonal. So I went off travelling.
Chris stands at an Olympic event in 2008, then a hang glider soaring over the countryside.
It was only when I came back from that trip that I went back to the GP and I saw a different doctor who didn't see any importance in rechecking
what was happening in my breast. It was only when I got home and Mum said, I don't trust this. I think you should go back and get a referral. That's when I was eventually referred to the breast clinic.
2009, the day of diagnosis.
I don't think I'll ever forget the minor details of that day. Mum drove me to the hospital. The weather was beautiful. I wore this mini skirt with tights, and my mum said it was like way too short, but anyway, I wore it anyway. The doctor came in and just sort of walked into this tiny little room, and I was sat on a chair and he kind of leaned up against the bed and in a sort of roundabout way just spat out the fact that I had breast cancer.
Chris, speaking in 2013.
The hardest thing about that day was telling Myron.
Chris's twin sister, Myron, in 2013.
She was amazing. It's almost like she'd already tried to get her tears out of the way. She wanted me to be strong for her, but at the same time, she wanted to be strong for me.
On a bus, Chris smiles and gives two thumbs up.
When they said I had breast cancer, they were a bit worried about the fact I had pain in my lower back, and so they investigated that with a bone scan. Deep down, I knew it was the cancer that had spread.
She buries her face in her hands.
Exactly a week later, I got the results for those scans, and they said it was in my spine too.
Myron.
I was in the room when she was told by her oncologist, and she almost fainted because she couldn't she couldn't deal with what she'd just been told at all. All I had in my mind was that I was going to lose my sister and that she wasn't going to grow up to be old with me.
A home movie of Chris and Myron blowing out candles on a birthday cake.
Say something. I went home and Googled survival rates for people diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and they said 2 to 3 years.
Moving along a hospital corridor facing the ceiling, then a nurse opens a sealed package.
This is the needle, which Christine is not afraid of at all, bless her.
I love needles. I think I've had about 100 needles now. The immediate treatment that I needed was radiotherapy to my spine because I could hardly walk at that point.
Sharp scratch, Christine.
But I also had to have chemotherapy. In fact, I started on the 1st of April, April Fool's Day.
A treatment room. This is the chemotherapy suite.
The first round. Yay! Here she was, a 23-year-old with breast cancer, and she'd never in her life been told to check herself.
Chris, in a hospital gown, flicks through a magazine.
Bored. Patriotic pooches.
It's always a really good read.
When she was diagnosed, she just said, look, I've got this wild idea. What's happened to me is going to happen to others. Let's stop that from happening.
Ha, hombres. So most of you are now aware of my bursting desire to raise awareness of young women's breast cancer. I need all of you wonderfully creative / intelligent / fabulous bods to put your bestest thinking caps on for campaign ideas and inspiration. This is why I'm having the meeting on Monday at our place for us to brainstorm and bring ideas to the table. I want it to be huge.
Friend Stacey.
She wasn't going to allow cancer to hold her back. Tina wants to do something, she's going to do it. It does not matter if she's feeling unwell. She just grew into this incredible person. That was always it within her. She just needed something to be passionate about.
All of us were very swept up with her. She was oozing, like, life and ideas, and she was desperate to make big shit happen. We just threw out any ideas. Let's get labels and bras. Let's get TV adverts. Let's get into universities. Let's speak to kids at schools.
Copperfield. What do you think about that for a name? I asked sheepishly, knowing its connotations to unsolicited groping. Great, Brilliant. Spot on. These were not the responses I was expecting. I discovered the unspoken power that comes with having cancer. People are far too afraid to upset you.
Maren.
She was literally having chemo and wasn't very well herself at the time, but she was just constantly emailing people and phoning people and just harassing people, saying, let me come to this thing where there's lots of young people. Let me talk to them about how important it is to check their views.
June 2009, 4 months since diagnosis, at a festival.
That first summer was just so busy. We'd sort of bowl into festivals with very little. We'd have a gazebo and a face painting kit and some stickers. It gave us that perfect time. You had someone in front of you to talk to about boobs, whether they wanted that or not.
The shape, contours, texture.
I'm aware!
You were putting tattoos on people, you were talking to strangers in public, you were wearing a giant tit. There was no wallowing. She had a clipboard, you had a job. That's how it worked.
It was strangely liberating to have already experienced some of the worst things that can happen to you at the age of 23. I felt myself grow into someone I did not recognise. Someone who had found a purpose.
Because she's going through chemo, yeah, maybe she should have had a sit down and a rest, but her body was allowing her to get up and do it. I mean, there were lots of naps in vans and taking drugs in the back of the vans, legal drugs prescribed that you meant to take because you've got cancer.
I think my friends were so happy to support what I was doing because it meant I wasn't focusing on being ill because they didn't know how to face that. But they did know how to walk around with a pink wig on and a bucket shouting, check your boobs.
Hello, Maren.
Hello.
Athena, hello.
Hello.
When she was diagnosed, she felt she had very little to offer to the world. She had very low self-esteem. She had no purpose. And I think Copperfield gave her that in abundance.
Chris wearing tiger face paint.
Wanting to get every ounce out of this life is a way of her controlling this disease. By the end of the summer, she was exhausted and wasn't able to do much anymore and definitely needed a break. And then she was given a Pride of Britain award.
October 09, Chris, Maren and their mother at a railway station.
I'm so excited. So, it's 4th October today. Today, we're heading to London, the Pride of Britain Awards. So, we're now at the hotel, and we're just about to go and walk to the room. What is it? What is it? Ooh. Oh, God. Like the best hamper in the world.
I'd already decided I wouldn't be wearing my wig. As I neared the end of chemo, my hair was already starting to come back. I just really wanted that moment to be worthwhile for Copperfield and its future. After all, a lot more people were about to hear about it.
Tonight, from the Grosvenor House in the heart of London's West End, the Daily Mirror's Pride of Britain Awards.
Our winner is here, and she is Christine Hallinger.
Crucially, I did not fall over. In fact, I was practically floating on the clapping and whooping. It had been just 8 months since I'd been told I had cancer.
This award shouldn't just be for me, it's for all the people that have been helping out as well.
On the campaign?
Yes, on the campaign.
Okay, the key message of the campaign is?
To get to know those boobies.
So you are amazing, you're very, very brave, and I'm so glad to meet you. Brilliant.
Completely inspiring, well done.
So when I was standing on stage accepting that award, I was like, this is so surreal and fantastic, but announcing that someone is the Pride of Britain for being diagnosed with breast cancer at 23, starting a campaign. By this point, we weren't even a charity. Pride of Britain worthy? Not sure. But what that gave me was this, like, enormous need to prove that I actually deserve that award and make something amazing out of Copperfield.
3 weeks later, Chris's head's now covered in a thin fuzz of hair.
OK, so it's October 27th, and tomorrow I go in for my mastectomy. It's weird because today is actually the first day I've
actually really thought about what's happening tomorrow. And although it's not freaking me out one bit, it's actually just dawned on me that I'm losing part of me tomorrow.
Chris filling in a hospital admission form, leaving the house, then travelling in a car. Maren.
What scares me a lot about the operation is just seeing Christine come out of the operation and for the next week or so, her being vulnerable, ill Christine.
How are you feeling? All right. It hurts.
We've seen Christine like we've never seen her before. And it's just a complete contrast to Christine that we are used to. And that's a kind of side that you just don't really want to ever see.
That's the thing about being a twin. You live the same life in two bodies.
Film of the twins as babies, then small girls.
Take me a picture!
We grew up in Germany. We had a pretty awesome childhood, running around making dens in the garden.
We never left the womb. We were very as one, in our own little contained bubble of twinness.
Our parents divorced when we were 11 and we moved to England.
See ya.
1997.
This is our new house.
Our life completely changed when we moved to England.
All of a sudden, we were put into this whole new world, starting in a new school when you don't know anyone, but at least you've got your sister there.
We became the weird little German twins. We only spoke German to each other.
Hallo, wir sind hier mit einem Zug hergekommen.
Maren and I didn't realise just how lucky we were to have each other and always have, like, someone to mess around with, have fun with, play games with.
Being a twin is a superpower. You can't doubt yourself because there's someone always backing you up.
It's her birthday as well, fortunately. I got this beautiful scarf.
We had the craziest imaginations. We would make up games.
Welcome to Poop Leader!
This is the smelliest guinea pig in the world!
But people just went along with it. They were sort of swept up with our mad little ideas. I think we were really annoying, but we didn't care. That was the joy of being in our world. It doesn't matter what other people think of us, because we had each other.
2012, 3 years since diagnosis. Chris flops onto a bed, then lies on her front, clutching a toy stuffed panda. She faces the camera.
It's the 11th of June, 2012, and the day that I find out that I have a brain tumour.
She puffs out her cheeks and shakes her head.
My doctor said he wasn't worried and that my headache was probably nothing. Turns out that it's actually something, a little 5-millimeter-sized something deep within my brain.
5 arcs. That's the little lesion. Teeny tiny.
It's ridiculous.
I know, but that's...
The plan is to obliterate it.
Chris lies on a treatment couch. A mesh mask is placed over her face, then a green laser beam shone on her head.
The cancer just kept finding a new home in her body, and she became really unwell. But the charity was growing, and she was just too busy to be ill.
You're so young. Yeah. So young. Do you think that was why nobody picked up on it?
Yeah, they just kept telling me I didn't fit the profile of breast cancer. I mean, it does generally happen to older women, but it's not impossible for young women. And if I had been told that it can happen at a younger age, then I would have been checking my breast and I would have been more vigilant. I would have said, look, it can happen. Please refer me.
The more people listened, the more people were checking. And then, you know, that first email where someone actually said, thanks to you, I went back to my doctor. And I've now been diagnosed with breast cancer, but at a really early age. That was the golden ticket, you know? That was the first time we realised that what we were doing was going to make a huge difference.
I think the fact that we were getting that feedback, that's when you go, well, we're not giving up now.
Today,
were on the way to BBC Radio 5 Live.
So proud. So proud.
It's amazing to think that we all started around my mum's kitchen table and suddenly we were at all these different awards nights where we were surrounded by celebrities who we knew could help send this message into the world. So we had to get in front of them and we did whatever it took.
Cosmopolitan Awards 2012. Women in stylish outfits pose on a red carpet for photographers. Broadcaster and presenter Fern Cotton.
First time I met Chris, up bounds this gazelle of gorgeousness, sticks a Copperfield sticker on me. And I was like, oh my God, the famous Chris that I've been hearing about. The next thing you know, I'm doing the Bath Half Marathon.
Hi, my name's Fern Cotton, and I'm about to run the Bath Half, and I'm really scared.
You can't say no to Chris. Did I want to do a half marathon? No. No, I did not. Did I do it? Yes. Yes, I did. So I had quite a harsh initiation into my friendship with Chris, but also I loved her from the minute that I met her.
Are you twins? Identical, aren't you?
Chris has always had that otherworldly quality to her, and especially when Chris and Maren were together, it was pure magic.
We got to take one all together. Hello, hello, hello.
Copperfield.
There's this weird distance, a canyon between people walking around and the celebrities. Chris literally stomped all over that.
Tell me why you're involved with Copperfield now.
You are the reason I'm involved, because you abused me at the Pride of Britain Awards 2 years ago.
I don't think you can say that.
This is my new pad. Moved into a new flat in London town.
With Chris, there was a kind of forward energy, a momentum, that you had no chance of stopping. A superpower. I was in awe of that.
So you know what you're doing. Cutting and cutting and cutting.
You would not have known that she had anything going on physically whatsoever. You know, even if she was suffering, even if she was incredibly exhausted, in pain, she didn't really let on.
You never forget cancer's a bitch, but you kind of fall into this false sense of security. They're not beating this, but they are on a winning streak.
2013, Chris is on the phone.
Hi, could I please order a cab? Charing Cross Hospital, Fulham Palace Road. Hi.
Hiya.
There are police all over this junction, stopping Pauline McGeff. Just gives you the latest stats of where we are. Can't tell you exactly where we are for obvious reasons.
At the hospital, Chris goes into a room to meet with consultant medical oncologist Professor Justin Stebbing.
Hi.
Nice to see you. How are you doing?
Good.
Come sit down. Good to see you.
Good to see you too.
She takes a seat.
Let's talk about the scans, because obviously that's what you want to talk about. So the one lesion we can see on the right side of the brain, you know, that's where you had the stereotactic radiosurgery, the gamma knife treatment. That's bigger.
Okay.
I think it's cancer. And the reason why I say that is because you can see this sort of penumbra, this sort of halo or shadow of swelling around the area. I would like to consider removing it, because it is larger.
Yep.
But there is also room for more radiotherapy to it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we have a plan A and a plan B.
OK.
Chris has dabbed her eyes.
Sorry to upset you. Don't mean to.
On a snowy day, a small van with the Copperfield logo on the side drives along. In a car park, Chris and Maren step out of the van and walk towards a school.
School should be banned when it's snowing.
Maren and I had become a double act of boob chat. For almost 2 years, we had been going into schools giving talks to sixth formers about why checking their boobs was a really important thing to start doing.
Hello, I'm Chris. This is my sister Maren. And this is Sarah, one of our boobettes. And yeah, we're from Copperfield. So I was a healthy kid. I absolutely never had any worries about, you know, getting cancer at a younger age or even considering the fact that I would get cancer at a young age.
I couldn't help but start to think that Copperfield shouldn't have to be the ones doing talks in schools about breast cancer. Mara and I couldn't be in every school.
The government need to put cancer awareness onto the curriculum and make it compulsory, because it affects so many of us. This is my campaign now. Cancer awareness on the syllabus. Yes.
after dark, driving along.
You can be so happy and so grateful and so astounded, proud of success of your charity and the money that you raise. But unless you're reaching a point where you're no longer needed, what are you proud of?
We are here on the bridge already.
Tonight we are projecting an image of our three party leaders, Clegg, Cameron and Miliband, onto the Houses of Parliament with the fact one in three people are diagnosed with cancer.
I'm just going to keep you on the phone, OK?
OK, cool.
Cancer now affects one in two of us, FYI.
We're going to set up James Bond action style. We won't have long to project either because we could quite easily be told to move along. Just need to get the money shot.
A projector.
OK, we're ready. Oh, God, I feel sick.
A giant hand-drawn image of the three main UK political party leaders is projected onto the House of Commons.
Oh, my word.
The image is captioned, one in three are diagnosed, hashtag rethink cancer.
Look at it!
Our first photo, our first image. Looks amazing.
It looks pretty cool, actually. Oh, that looks good.
Okay. We've got a problem, I think. Looks like there's some policemen that have just rocked up.
We're a breast cancer charity.
Just take the date first, please.
We have got some good photos, so
I hope it's a good ending.
It would be another 3 years until we would finally hear that cancer was being added to the curriculum, thanks to the collective hassling by us and other equally desperate parties.
Your message about early diagnosis is terribly, terribly important.
Early diagnosis saves lives.
I want to help ensure all cancers are diagnosed early.
It's never too early to...
I didn't know I could have breast cancer that young.
Let's teach cancer awareness.
I wish I'd learned the signs and
symptoms. What we teach children today...
Education is the most powerful weapon that we have.
Let's rethink cancer.
People don't understand the extent as to what she's done. She's, like, totally changed the whole conversation around it. Culturally. Hard to change things culturally or systemically. She did it.
Fern Cotton. 2016, 7 years since diagnosis.
The cancer has progressed again and I have a new tumour in my liver. There's a new lesion in my brain as well. Here. It's not that bad. We are doing something about it and I'm still fine and I'm functioning and I can live on my own and I'm about to feed myself and I have an appetite and all of that stuff. I'm well. But at what point is it okay for me to freak the fuck out about all this?
Chris blinks, holding back tears. Later in the kitchen, a black cat's examining a collection of bin bags. Chris brings in a plant, then picks up a bulging bag and carries it outside. Cornwall, a low sun over a sandy bay. Dressed in a yellow jacket and a woolly hat, Chris climbs over some large rocks in the shallows.
I'm very happy to be moving to Cornwall. Life in Cornwall is very different to London. I live in a house with my car. I'm so close to the sea, I can walk there. I don't have the stress of the London Underground anymore.
She floats on her back in the sea. Maren.
She needs to be able to slow down. She needs time and space. When you're constantly chasing the next thing, you're not allowing yourself to get to that point.
In her kitchen, Chris swallows some tablets with a mouthful of water.
She wants to be close to me and she wants to be thinking about what's really important to her in her life and focusing more on herself.
So I have decided to step away from Copperfield a bit and I'm going to step down as CEO of the charity. This year's been really weird when it comes to my cancer and dying felt so real and I didn't know what to do about that. I didn't know how to handle that feeling and that situation, and it scared me. Being the person that I am, it has spurred me on to kind of look at what I'm doing with my life and how I want to actually come to terms with dying, because I'm not there yet. I essentially need to get a grip.
2019, 10 years since diagnosis. Chris driving along a narrow road flanked with leafy trees, then sitting in a garden with Maren while a toddler, Herbie, crawls over the grass. Maren.
I was terrified to tell her I was pregnant. I knew that this would change our lives forever. There was now going to be another being that would affect our relationship. You're fucking kidding. That's what she said.
Maren, having an ultrasound scan.
My life was going in a different direction to hers, but she also knew that she was still very much part of that, and I still very much needed her. As time went on, she was really excited. She got so excited about it. She wanted to live all of this with me, knowing that she was never going to be living that life.
I was there at Herbie's birth, and I still have PTSD. It was something, I mean, incredible. He's a quarter of me.
In the garden, Chris picks Herbie up and gently moves him back and forth.
Oh, okie dokie.
When I held Herbie while Maren was having her bits sewn back up, he confirmed something very reassuring that I sort of already knew. That life goes on. Chris, I've got this, I read in his eyes.
Maren watches as Chris sits on a garden swing with Herbie on her lap, moving slowly back and forth. On a bed, a heap of newspaper cuttings.
We started from nothing and it's become a huge life-saving charity. These as a reminder of all of that and how to see how far we've come. We received so many emails and letters. Hi, I'm 24 and suddenly I found a massive lump and they told me it was cancer. I was so, so lucky I found it as it hadn't spread. I just hope I can get a message to Chris and this charity because I honestly believe it has saved my life.
Driving along.
Hi, Chris. I have to say a huge thank you to you. For over a month, I'd felt a lump in my breast. And that morning, I just wanted to say thank you. You are an inspiration and are making a difference to people's lives. Here's to the big adventure of life. I found a lump in November at the age of 29. I got it early and it wasn't overly aggressive, so I've been given a very positive prognosis. Thank you for all the awareness. I'm 52 now and I have a 16-year-old daughter. I'm so grateful to be alive, to see them grow up. And I wanted you to know that it is not just young people's lives you are saving, but women of all ages. I believe that my cancer could have been a lot worse, with a worse outcome, if I had not seen Chris's story. She saved my life. These letters meant everything to us. And I think for Chris it was important because there was no undoing what had happened to her, but she felt that by spreading her story and ensuring other people's breast cancers were diagnosed early, it was almost righting the wrongs of what happened to her.
Come on, Ma, you got this.
2023, 14 years since diagnosis. The Bay in Cornwall, then Chris in her kitchen, eating spoonfuls of food from a bowl. Her head is bored again.
In September last year, on another routine scan, we discovered that the treatment that I was on at the time, which was a chemo pill, was really not working.
Lady! Okay, she's in the fire pit. Cool. Come on!
Cancer's very smart. It mutated and it found a way to grow. So I had quite a lot of progression in my liver, and then we did a brain scan as well, and that showed lots of progression in my brain.
Chris drinks from a bottle of water. On a counter, an array of pill containers and boxes.
I'm having a CT scan, which I have every 3 months, and pre-chemo blood test. The last scan showed that there wasn't
huge improvement, but there wasn't, it wasn't worse either. So I'm hoping that that's what I'm aiming for. That's not worse.
Chris lying in a scanner.
So we're going to be doing chest, abdomen and pelvis today.
An image of her internal organs appears on a screen. Now, a nurse takes blood samples from Chris.
Deep breath in for me. Well done, well done.
The cupboard isn't empty yet when it comes to cancer drugs, but it's certainly not full of options anymore.
Chris, sitting on a bed, glances down at her cat who's flopped beside her, wearing a cone. Chris looks thoughtful, clasping her hands beneath her chin. In a pub garden, at a table with other young women.
If you found out you only had 30 days to live, how would you spend the next 30 days?
Oh, God. I'd probably eat loads of food. Seeing as much of people as possible.
Do outrageous things.
Yeah.
I would totally try heroin.
Would you actually?
On day 30.
Yeah, I guess. Okay. Toasting to living.
Yeah.
Living!
They clink glasses.
After all that. Yeah, none of that after that. Just live. I'm having a funeral, which is a living funeral and celebration of my life before I die.
She said, I've been thinking about how I want my funeral to be and how I want to leave this world, and I want to be there.
It just sounds so vain and, like, needy that I need to hear what people have to say about me. But I do think that's essentially what I'm doing. It's happening in Cornwall, it's happening in a cathedral, 20-piece orchestra, a silent disco. And I'm also going to have a cardboard coffin there for people to write things on.
Inside the cathedral, Maren arranges a vase of flowers.
It was just classic Tina with lots of amazing ideas, and I was like, yeah, cool, OK. Of course we're doing this thing.
I'm putting the fun in funeral. And maybe I'm scared of the word funeral. Funeral feels too final.
I'm pulling myself together. I don't want to cry right now. When she said, I need Dawn French to be there as Vicar of Dibley, without that, it's not going to happen. Of course.
Actress Dawn French.
She Zooms me and she immediately explains to me what she's planning to do. And I'm thinking, OK, so she wants me to come to a funeral. She wants me to come to a party. She wants me to just be there and be part of the day. And I thought, this is not it, is it? And as the conversation went on, she gets braver and braver. And then she goes, the thing I'd really love, and everyone's told me not to ask you, but the thing I'd really love is if you would be the vicar. She's got a winning, very seductive way, and she knows she's playing you. She tells you she's playing you, and you're willingly played. And that's how it goes.
At the Royal Cornwall Hospital.
I think waiting for the results at this stage in the game is harder, because in the past, I've always had a vague idea of what we might do next if the scans show that the treatment's not working. And this time, I have no idea.
I'm getting on.
All right.
Hello.
Yeah, the last couple of days I haven't felt that great.
It's nausea and vomiting is better.
Yeah.
Energy levels?
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, fine. I'm having chemo.
If you get the red stuff. Here we go.
I'm here almost every Monday. It's 2 weeks on, 1 week off. And then we have pre-meds to help with the side effects. And one of them puts me to sleep.
On her mobile.
Hello, hi. I'm good. I'm sat in my chemo chair again as it's Monday.
Chris closes her eyes, holding the phone to her ear.
Yes.
She screws up her face.
Why can't we do Gamma Knife anymore?
Chris presses one hand to her face. Her fingernails are painted a bright shade of purple, and she's wearing rings on all her fingers.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you then. Okay, speak to you later. Bye. Bye.
As Chris wipes her eyes, a nurse asks, "Are you okay?" The nurse asks, "Do you want to pull the curtains round?" Then does so, drawing the drapes around Chris's chair. Was it the phone call you just had? The brain scan, says Chris. Just loads of new disease in my brain.
Just loads of new disease in my brain.
So I have to have whole brain radiotherapy, probably.
Which I've... No, I just... I've been avoiding it for so long. Mm. Now that seems to be the only option. Of all the things I care about, it's like... It's my mind.
Yeah.
So I don't want to lose. So... That's what scares me.
But you've not had any effect so far. It's just a scan that's picked up, hasn't it?
Yeah,
so they can get on top of things early and start the radiotherapy.
Yeah.
The nurse is crouched beside Chris's chair.
It's just shit. Shit is the word.
Yep.
Won't say no.
Chris hugs the nurse, who holds her close and rubs her back comfortingly. At Murren's, Herbie, who's now 4 years old, is tinkering with a toy car in the garden. Murren.
Hi.
How was it?
Not good. Oh, not good.
Chris says they're not going to do Gamma Knife.
Because there's so much. I said to her, give me a positive about the whole brain, but she's like, well, you seem to do really well with radiation. You seem to respond to it really well.
Chris presses her lips together.
I think that's what she said.
Chris turns her head away from Murren.
What's the worst that can happen?
I forget who I am. As Chris dabs her eyes, Murren puts her face in her hands.
Forget who you are.
They stand together, holding each other close. Later, Chris gets a call from her oncologist, Duncan.
Hello.
Hello, Elaine. Yeah. Having fun for you, wasn't it?
No, not really. No,
not really.
She said that she was going to email you as well. I don't know if she already has or not.
She has, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I just had a look, yeah.
I don't know. Tell me something positive about whole brain and someone that has, like, survived for a long time, because... I don't know anyone that is still alive who's had it. So.
Well, it depends. I mean, for most people, you can see how they're going to go. I mean, the main short-term effects are hair loss, which you ain't going to notice, sadly.
Nope.
And then it does make you a bit knackered. Now, it's true, you know, I know you've always said, oh, I wouldn't have it, but that's up to you. But it's, you know, it's like IV chemo, I guess, once you think, oh, fuck, I suppose we've run out of sabre options, then, you know, it doesn't turn you into a non-functioning halenga forevermore, you know, and your tumours, you know, they've been relative, they've been sensitive, haven't they? It's just the other ones next door have just grown up.
All right, I'll let you go home now. And I'll see you on Saturday.
See you Saturday. Keep grinning.
Yeah, I'll try. Yeah. Okay, I'll speak to you later.
Right.
Bye. Okay. Bye. Bye-bye.
At home, Chris is lying under a cover, resting her head on a pillow.
We're just 3 days away from the party now. And last night was the first night that I really struggled to sleep. There's still, like, stuff to do. Things I'm worried about. Things like, what do we do if we run out of toilet paper?
will all the toy cats from IKEA arrive today or not? And then in the next minute, I remember that I have lots of new brain tumours. And so I'm going to have whole brain radiotherapy not long after the party. Which, in a way, makes the party feel even more meaningful and important. Kind of feels like the last hurrah. But I don't know why, because I'm going to be fine.
Nurses fit a mask over Chris's head, then she slid into a scanner. The rose-shaped stained glass window of Truro Cathedral. Chris's head is coated with silver glitter and she wears a purple sequined jacket. To Dawn French.
I actually have one question about my speech.
Yes.
Do you recall, in the Vicar of Dibley, ever saying, you see, the thing about death is, it's, well, it's so terribly final, whereas life, life is full of opportunities?
That sounds right. That sounds right.
OK, I just wanted to check.
No, you just take deep, deep breaths. Do you know about breathing?
It's always
a good idea for a start. Before things start, if you took in 10 really good, right to your bumhole breaths, it will just help you.
Chris takes deep breaths.
God, it's lovely, isn't it? Air. Gorgeous.
Chris exhales, smiling.
Especially cathedral air.
Now Dawn's in the pulpit addressing the packed church.
Hello, ladles and jelly spoons. If I could just have your attention, I'm sorry to say that the vicar who was meant to be standing here today is unwell. You'll be pleased to know that I've done a lot of research on Chris. He was a very remarkable man indeed. A professor of philosophy, a glorious violinist, an internationally renowned scientist. They were just three of his unfortunate victims on his final fateful killing spree.
Chris.
I really didn't know what I was doing with this event, but right now I am really happy and I feel such heart-bursting love. Life can be so good. But I think mine is especially good because I have had Maren by my side since we met in the womb. My heart shatters at the thought of not being with you. There's a funny bit coming up soon. Recently, I was thinking about the fact that I've been single for 10 years. That's when you'll gasp. But not once have I felt lonely. When you have a Ma, you will never feel true loneliness. How lucky am I? You see, the thing about death is it's, well, so terribly final. Whereas life is full of opportunities. So let's seize these opportunities. Let's live fully, love deeply, and make today count. I love you.
Maren, who's wearing a shiny golden fringed top and shorts, leads the guests in a standing ovation. Chris comes to her and they hold each other in a close embrace.
Get up off your feet if you need to.
An aerial performer twirls around a length of silky fabric suspended from the ceiling, and guests dressed in colourful sequined outfits dance. Three lighted candles are placed on Chris's cardboard casket, alongside brightly coloured pens and note cards. Some of the partygoers are writing messages on the casket, which is dotted with cute cat stickers. A glitter ball hangs in the church, and party confetti swirls around above the heads of the dancing guests. In a quiet corner of the cathedral, Chris and Maren are sitting on a step together.
Everything was, like, on point.
I'm better.
Yeah. I really did it.
No, we did it. It was all in your head and it happened.
Chris rests her head on Muran's shoulder. 10 months later, 15 years after diagnosis, on Chris's kitchen counter is a collection of pill containers and boxes. Beside them is a paper marked Daily Must Take and a notepad listing tablets, dosage and times of day. A podcast recording.
How are you doing at the moment?
So I've had cancer in my brain for like over 10 years now, but I've never had symptoms from the brain tumours until recently. I had a brain seizure. That was really scary. Yeah, so the cancer is certainly not stable and I'm constantly on treatment. And there's only so many treatments you could try.
Hi, Muran. It's the community nurse again.
Chemo is no longer advised because they don't really feel the chemo's going to do much anymore. So we're kind of at symptom management now.
Looking strained, Muran clutches a hot drink.
Condition will deteriorate, possibly quite quickly. It just means that I need to be around a bit more to support her with day-to-day things.
A wooden plaque with an image of a puffin suspended from a wall.
Where we're at with Tina is that on the days where she feels a bit more able, we need to make the most of those days.
Muran manoeuvres a wheelchair through a sliding door and down a step into the garden. Want a hand?
Spot mode.
She helps Chris into the chair.
We're just here to help her make those days happen and facilitate as much as we can. And if it sparks a bit of joy or just little moments of happiness, even if they are fleeting and last 5 seconds, that's enough right now. She's never really had a bucket list, but there's something about puffin that she just really loves, and she's never seen one.
They look through a glass window at a puffin floating on water.
I can see why you like them. They're pretty great.
I'm done. A puffin nestled by the side of a pool, then a seal swimming underwater. Footage of Chris, with short blonde hair escaping from a pink beret, on the shore. She takes off her backpack and puts it down on a rock before turning to face the sea, then making her way across the wet sand towards the shallows.
I'm imagining my perfect death scenario.
A tabby cat with a white face.
Lady Marmalade is purring gently at the end of the bed.
Aw, look at your little guard cat.
Yeah.
He's such a girl.
Chris is lying in bed.
A friend is massaging me.
Muran, seated beside the bed, rubs Chris's hand.
She's always loved a massage.
Chris's fingernails are painted in different colours.
I'm hoping it's relaxing.
With soft lighting. There is belly laughter. My old hometown friend Stacey is ensuring I get no sympathy.
You want to maybe stick your tongue out and see if you like it? Not really. Not really.
What about we put a bit of water in your mouth first just to wet your whistle a bit?
Yeah, that's it. Open a little bit more. This way. That's it. A bit more.
I am pain-free, but not so off by non-existent tits that I'm barely conscious. There are frames with photo memories. There is thoughtful silence. There is peace. There is closure.
Muran cuddles Lady Marmalade, who's wearing a pink striped garment. Muran reaches over to adjust Chris's pillow and the blanket that's covering her. Now, Muran's huddled on the chair at Chris's bedside, with a dog curled up beside her. A candle burns on a shelf beside an array of greetings cards.
She's endured so much and has been in pain and mentally and physically for years. And I think she
she's had enough now. She's had enough. Yeah, I think she's known for a while that the end is coming. And I don't want to see her enduring this life that she's living now.
Maren walking alone on an empty beach.
I just want it to be at peace.
A photo of Chris, Maren and Stacey holding ice creams. Chris is bald and wearing a huge smile. Chris died at home, Saturday, May 4th, 2024. Maren, Stacey and Lady Marmalade were by her side. Maren's on the garden swing, swaying back and forth by herself.
She wouldn't want us to think that her life was cut short. She lived a full life until the end.
Now, Maren's walking down to the beach with a group of women, carrying a bag.
I want to spread her ashes in places that meant a lot to her. And one of those is the sea.
Tequila? How's it going?
Maren and the other women down tequila shots.
Sandra's being mixed in with it now.
The most excellent cocktail ever made.
Maren fills shot glasses with ashes from a container and hands them around. Then the women all wade into the sea, carrying the small cups. Maren scatters the ashes on the surface of the sunlit water. Film of Chris talking to a camera.
Dear 23-year-old Chris, you are at the foothills of something really rather shite. You are frightened, of course you are. But in the darkest of moments, I want you to remember one thing. Life will go on in the most spectacular of ways. You will no longer need to see proof that people live with cancer for a long time because you become the proof. It won't be long before you become someone with a purpose. You will strive to live a life that others want to be part of. You will rope countless friends and then hundreds of strangers into your charity. You will get cancer on the school curriculum. Life will take on a whole new meaning. You will experience pain, so much pain. You won't get married. You will accept death. You were not offered cancer, but you were offered an opportunity to learn so much from having it. It means you can accept it and all the lessons it's taught you and the life you've shaped around it. In doing so, you accept that life is fleeting. You accept that cancer is going to kill you.
The women pose with Chris's urn, which is painted with a sunset motif.
In accepting your illness, you start to let go of so much and just be.
A close-up of a smiling Chris.
In accepting your fate, you give yourself space to live.
Thanks to Maren and family. Christine Helenga, 1985 to 2024.
Details of organisations offering information and support with bereavement or cancer are available on the BBC Actionline website.